podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donny Review system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Coach Unplugged. We're so excited you decided to join us. Before we jump in today, go down, leave a review in iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. We do love those and they help a ton. They do. That's a free way of kind of helping us out. Another way of helping us out is to help our sponsors. So first of all, Dr. Dish, if you're thinking of getting a team that wants to shoot the ball better and consistently put that round ball into that cylinder, check out Dr. Dish. Mention Coach Unplugged, they'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. If you're looking for a one-stop shop, if you're looking to become a better basketball coach, if you're looking for a mentor, if you're looking to talk to me on a regular basis, right, James? Then you can become a teachhoops.com member, and I'll put you on the bat phone and we'll take care of your specific needs. So come over and check us out at teachhoops.com. Let's head off to the podcast. One. All right, welcome to Coach Unplugged. Oh, thousand something. I don't even know where we're at this point. I've lost track. So James and I were talking before we came on the air. I was trying to get some background. I won't call him a vagabond, but you've traveled around a little bit. This is absolutely great. People don't. That's what people don't realize about this country too. It's like there's so many hidden gems and so many little places that if you only stay in the Midwest, you're gonna miss them. But so Coach James, I'm gonna have you kind of introduce yourself and then tell your basketball journey, kind of, you know, either where you start playing or how you kind of got into this game, and then how you got into coaching and then kind of what you're doing now. So I'll jump in. I'm not one to be bashful for asking questions, but introduce yourself and just kind of tell people a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I appreciate you having me. I'm from Miami, born and raised. So I never wanted to get involved in basketball. My dad just said when I was sixth grade, you're pretty tall. I think you should try the sport, even though I know nothing about it. So I did. And like probably a lot of people listening to this, fell in love with it. So I played through high school, tore my ACL going into my senior year. So that ended the playing side of things for me.
So I want to dive into Miami for a second. Okay. Sure. So we played in the Orange Bowl something a while ago.
Junior Orange Bowl.
Played in that. It was great. So we were talking about Sanibel Island for anybody that knows before we came on the air. So basically, here's my theory of Florida. Anywhere from Sanibel south, you basically get good weather most of the year. Is that true? Hot?
That's about right. If good weather to you is warm, yeah. Even through the winters and your Christmas, you're going to have an 85 degree Christmas if that's what you went into.
Yeah. Yeah. And we weren't talking about this, but Miami in the summer is like Wisconsin in the winter.
Exactly.
It's like the surface of the sun.
Yes. Yeah. You don't want to be outside. Your skin just falls off. It's ridiculous.
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. And that's when people go, how do you live in Wisconsin in January? I go, well, first of all, cold is, I think, actually easier to get used to be honest with you. When my kids were little, you have little kids, but when my kids were little, we just bundle them up and throw them outside. It doesn't matter what, and as long as they were dressed properly, they didn't care. Summers is like, it's brutal.
It's brutal. It is brutal.
Yes. That's why everyone's at the beach. So how did your family handle the injury? That had to be hard.
It was rough, especially when I came back and I told my dad, you know, I don't see the time here. I don't see how I'm going to get back to play. He didn't talk to me for like 2 or 3 days. He thought I was quitting. I said, I just can't get it. I just can't do it. So I took a year off. Yes, figured, you know, I'm going to go to college and move on to other stuff. But I got kind of roped back in by a friend of mine who has some kids. I said, why don't you coach my kids' little league team? I think it would be good. Let's do it together. So I did. And then started working some camps. One of my bosses recommended me for an assistant women's coaching job at Miami. At the time, it was Miami-Dade Community College. Now it's Miami-Dade College. So I did that for 3 months before I was offered a job to take over a girls' basketball program in South Florida. Didn't think it was going to last there very long, but did it for 9 years, which was a great experience.
Okay, so hold on. Before we jump onto that, so I want to jump back to the Little League thing. What did you learn from doing that?
A ton of patience, and a lot of communication skills with kids, with parents. It just it really made you kind of dig in, become a better coach, because these kids, at least the ones I took over, they were 8, 9 years old. We were talking really, really young kids.
I'm telling you, I had an interview with a WNBA player. I won't spoil it because I haven't put it up yet, but she basically says every coach should do that, because what it does is it teaches you to break down the game. And it's true. If you can teach an 8, 9 year old to play basketball, you can teach a 15 year old, a 22 year old, an NBA or a WNBA player.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Unfortunately for me, I was like 20 or 21 at the time. So being a student of the game, I wasn't as, I guess, polished as I am today. Back then, I was just trying to get the right drills and get the right offense for 8 and 9 year olds. But I did that for a few years, and it just catapulted me to what I ended up doing with the rest of at least career to this point.
So tell me about the junior college thing. Is it like Last Chance U? Is it similar to that?
I would say it was, you know, Susan Summons, who's a great coach. She's still the coach there. She taught me a lot in the little time I was with her. And, you know, it's just totally different because I was just used to Little League kids, and now I'm helping young ladies move into their dorms and helping them with furniture and going through all that other kind of stuff that, you know, you forget high school. It just went from Little League to the college. So it was a really, amazing experience for the time I was there. But, I felt bad after just a few months saying, hey, I got this other opportunity and I just think this is best for my career. Right. And, you know, so thankfully she showed me a lot of grace in that moment. And I went on and I got myself into the high school level, which I've been doing now for the last 15 years.
And what's the biggest difference between the college level and the high school level that you saw?
I mean, these are obviously the competitive level is completely different. The maturity level is completely different. You know, one of the biggest things I see, and I think you might've seen as well with some of the people you've coached, is the capacity for work. One of the things I've learned over the years, especially with some of the people I've worked with, that train NBA players is, you know, I thought there was a magic bullet, you know, like there's something different that they do. And, there's one gentleman named Don Kelbeck who's, everybody don't know him. I would really recommend looking him up on YouTube and stuff. He does JJ Barea, Carlos Arroyo, Roger Bell. He did a lot of their stuff. So he would take me with him and I'm watching his workouts with him. And it's just the same drills that we do with high school guys, college guys, elementary, middle school kids. It's just the capacity for work, the passion, the desire, how much time they're willing to put in. They will go max out on every drill. Whereas a high school kid will go for a minute and sort of slow down when he gets a little fatigued. And I think that's one of the biggest things I noticed right off the bat, obviously from, you know, going from rec league to college, but then, you know, going back to school, you know, that's some of the lessons I talk to my kids about is if that's your desire to play at that level, I can tell you that there's a certain level of work, of commitment you need to put in because of the things I was able to see.
Yeah, I was saying that that basically there's probably 2,000 people that could be walking around right now in the world that could be playing in the NBA, that they're good enough to be playing in the NBA, if not more, but they don't have something, you know, they don't have that work ethic. There's something missing from that. Otherwise they'd be playing there. And sometimes it's bad, but luck, but I love that. I call it that it factor. There's that it thing with the special ones. You know, there's something special there that's, what do you think the hardest thing to teach is?
Skill-wise, footwork. I think a lot of kids find it to be boring, but one of the foundations of coaching philosophy is there's three pivots, a front pivot, a pivot, the inside pivot, and the drop step. If we can master those three pivots and their counters, we have a really good foundation to build a player on top of that. So I find that as a skill to be something that's somewhat of a challenge to teach in terms of the overall game, the end game, because we probably like you, we have a shot. We don't have a shot clock. So I've found trying to teach that the last 3 minutes of the game sometimes have to be handled a little differently, especially if you're holding a lead with delay games.
Right.
Sometimes it's hard for kids to switch that from aggressive, because we teach, we have a very aggressive style of play, to now the ball matters more than the points. Our shot selection has got to be a whole lot different these last 3 minutes we're holding a lead. And some kids really, really, I find, struggle with that. So, but we spend a lot of time teaching the end game so we can close out some games that maybe we shouldn't have a business closing out.
What percentage do you use on footwork at practice? Hey everybody, hope you're enjoying the podcast. Please subscribe and like no matter where you listen to podcasts, whether you're jogging, walking the dogs, walking the kids, playing at the pool, go over and subscribe. Apple would be great, 5-star. If you're going to do a 2-star, don't do it. Spotify or wherever you listen. We would also love if you went over to teachhoops.com. It's what allows us to keep the lights on here and keep things a chugging. So go over and check that out. 14-day free trial. You know, everyone's got to work on their game and their craft. Come over and help us. And then the last thing is, if you're thinking of looking for other podcasts, go over and check out High School Hoops and Teacher Side Gig. Those are two other ones. And we might have a fourth one in the tank, but we'll tease you on that one. All right, let's head back to the podcast.
Off season, it's quite a bit. Probably about 50% of our work in the off season is spent on footwork. I mean, we incorporate obviously our shooting stuff into it, you know, catch, inside pivot, 1-2 shoot. In addition to the footwork stuff during the season, I try to do about 30 to 45 minutes a day of individual skill work with our team stuff. But obviously there's a lot of other stuff besides footwork, but I really put an emphasis on that in the off season when we can spend a lot of time and a lot of hours on it, because it's just about repetition, repetition, repetition. There is no substitute for repetition, and we can get that in the off season.
I wish you were part of our math department, because sometimes I think they're trying to get rid of repetition. It's like, that's the only, you need repetition. That's the way you need things. If you could only talk about one topic, so let's say I called you up and said, you can only talk about one topic, what would that topic be?
I hate to be generic, but I'm a defensive guy. We spend a lot of time on that, so I can go over a lot of stuff defensively. You know, we're a matchup zone team, so I spend a lot of time on that. So I have actually done coaches clinics where I present my matchup zone stuff. That's just what I believe wins us a lot of games, especially the team we have now. It's not a high scoring team. Our games are usually, we're scoring in the 30s and 40s. So we got to keep teams under 30 with the team I got now to win.
Well, that's interesting. How do you practice plan?
I'm very structured. I think much like you are, I got a paper every day. It's down to the minute. So I incorporate a lot of my game planning stuff that requires a lot of thinking early on. That's when players are most astute in my experience, where they can digest, they can process information.
They can learn the best early. Now, yeah. The hard part is for them to turn off the school and become an athlete. I mean, become a student of the game at that point, but to leave that. So we've been doing some meditation, some quiet time, some stuff to kind of to get that shift, because that's a hard shift for them. But I definitely think I have their attention better early than I do at the end. I've literally tried to make practice shorter. Like that's mm-hmm. been one of my, like the last 5 years, I go, okay, if I can make this rather than 2 hours, if I can make this 1 hour and 45 minutes, I'm going to have their attention better. You know, I'm just trying to, like, you know, and then it's not like I'm leaving. They can stay and work on their individual games. They can shoot. We can do other things in those 15 minutes if they want. But I have tried to, like, keep it contained. And I refer to it as a machine gun practice. Like, because it's like TikTok, you know, 60 seconds and then we're on the next thing, you know.
I'm with you. The school I'm at now, we have to practice in about an hour and a half because of gym capacity and two teams sharing the gym. So it's really challenged me as a coach, where I used to go 2 hours, and now what I used to do in 2 hours, I got to find a way to get it done in 90 minutes. Next year coming up, I'm actually coaching both teams, the boys and the girls.
The same season?
Same season. Same season.
Are you going to practice it's the first for 3 hours?
Basically, yeah. Hour and a half with one, hour and a half with the other. Now, there is an overlap. I'm not going to bore your listeners with our practice schedule. There is an overlap between practices where they share the gym for a segment of time. And I've got two coaches, one on each side, that's really going to be helping me out. So when I'm on one side, they're going to be running some stuff on the other side, and vice versa. But
that's crazy. Community
Christian squad here in, like, in East Texas.
You're going to have to take some naps. Or that's crazy. Like, I have enough hard – I have a hard enough time. You're a young pup, though. I have a hard enough time to keep energy up for an hour and a half. 3 hours. You're not going to see your kids.
No, we've have it where my last practice would end at, I think I have it at 6:15. So I'll still be home in time to tuck be with in. The family. So
yep. No, that special time when you do, yeah, to tuck in, read the books.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So that's, yeah. I was thinking, God, you're gonna be like coming home at like 9 o'clock. That's good. It's 6:15. Yeah,
some of the challenges will be games where, you know, we play an hour and a half and away, the game's at 7:30. I mean, there are going to be some challenges there, but you know, right now that's the plan and I'm gung ho about it. I'm excited about it, but yeah, it's definitely going to challenge me with practice plans. Especially you got two teams with two strengths, two different types of weaknesses. So it's like a teacher. It's different preps. It's two different types of preps.
Oh yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'll have to think about that. I've had other people do that, but never very long. I can tell you that. I did back-to-back seasons for 7 years. I thought it was going to kill me. Like, I went right from fall to winter. I was like, holy cow. Is there a coaching moment, either good or bad, that would be beneficial for a listener?
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, it's back in 2009, there was two teams in our district, us and our rival, who were competitive. So we're excited. We go into their gym and we lose 54-13. And
you lost what? Say that again.
54-13. So it's one of those.
It's one of those. You know, the thing about those don't hurt quite as bad as 54-53. Because when you lose 54-13, they're a lot better than you.
Well, here's the kicker is we had to do a lot of soul searching on this team. And 2 months later, we won against them in the district final, 59-54. Same team. Nobody was injured. Nobody was sitting out.
You should write same a team. You should write a book about that. That's a crazy.
I've said to people, if I ever write a book, that's got its own chapter. But for me, as a young coach, that was the school's first district championship in the school's history at that moment. So for me as a coach, I mean, we had to scout, there was a lot of film, there was a lot of prep that we had to do. But a lot of it was psychological. A lot of it was emotional. I had a great assistant coach who talked about burning the bridges, had the girls in tears, and they believed, right? I mean, that's, to me, it's a lesson I carry to this day. One of my players asked me about a month ago, she goes, do you really think every game you walk in that you're going to win? I said, I didn't used to. But now I do.
I have after not, that experience. I had early in my career, I had some teams that were, I mean, they're great guys. And some, I think three of them are dentists now, and they're great fathers. But they were not very good basketball players. And it's like, oh my goodness, those are hard. Those are so hard. But I've never coached a game, even when we were bad like that. I've never coached a game I didn't think we could have win, never, ever.
She asked me that question, but I share that story with her and most of my teams when things are we're having some adversity. I've learned that the lesson to answer your question. I learned is there's always a way. I mean, you have to believe there's always a way. You know, it may not always work out at the end. But you definitely got to go in with the mindset that this can happen. And I always share that story, especially all the details that go into it with folks.
Well, that's part of the reason I have an issue with the shot clock too, is you're trying to take away a tool in my toolbox to maybe have a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do use, like I said, end game. I use that, not having a shot clock. If I got to slow stuff down, I'm using that to my advantage and I'm running some clock if I need to. So, yeah, it was a great moment for me. It was a great learning opportunity for me as a coach and for the player. I never forget that moment. I mean, you've probably been there. I'm sitting there. We're shooting two free throws with 3 seconds, and I'm looking, and I see my shooting guard, Elisa, half court with tears rolling down her eyes. To this day, I've had players say, you know, that I've accomplished this in life because of what I learned during that experience.
Right.
That's, as you know, as a coach, man, that means more than just on-court success, that you had an impact on somebody.
If you could talk to a coach for an hour, living or dead, any sport, who would you be and what would you talk about?
That's a great question. I'm going to pick a live coach, and I'm going to show some Miami bias here. I'd go with Pat Riley. I think
Disease of Me, great book.
Yeah, it's down here in my bookshelf to my right here. You know, I just think he's a basketball genius. I've listened to Eric Spoelstra. I've worked in his basketball academy momentarily. So the stuff that goes into that Heat culture and the basketball knowledge and the experience that comes with Pat Riley. I would sit there for much more than an hour. I heard him speak. I didn't have a chance to interact, ask questions, right. But I would definitely love the opportunity.
I don't even know if I've answered this. I think alive, it would be Brad Stevens, I think. Yeah. I think he thinks I'm skipping Coach K and Pop and all that. But I just, there's something. I think I would talk to him because he made that kind of transition. And then, I don't even know. Dad would probably be Wooden, but, you know.
So I was going to cut you off and say it'd be Wooden. For me,
yeah, it would be a young Bobby Knight too, because I think Bobby's starting to. I think he's got a little dement. I think there's something going on there. No one will ever say anything, but you know, Bobby in the '80s, it'd be interesting. It'd been interesting.
Yeah,
Because these,
these are all right answers. There's no wrong answers here.
Hey everybody, if you like the podcast, make sure you subscribe, like, leave a review, jump up and down, run around your house, whatever you need to do. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.